Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
It's time for another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, we talk about ghosts and Sasquatch and near-death experience and all sorts of fun stuff here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm Johnny Manson.
And I'm John Connor.
And our guest today is a good friend to the show, and he's a personal friend of mine. He is one of the field investigators for the BFRO. Welcome back to the show, Scott Taylor.
Thank you.
Now, you happen to be a Bigfoot researcher.
Okay. Investigator.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it since 2006.
Long time.
A long time, yep.
Now, I happen to know you, and we've known each other for years, and I'm asking you these questions. I already know the answers to, so people listening might go, why did he ask him that? He knows Scott. I mean, come on. He knows this stuff, but then John doesn't. So do you have any questions?
No, I'm right just off the bat? Ready to start. Hearing about your encounters, what you've seen, and what you know.
Oh, wow. How many hours do we have?
Right. Okay. As many as you need.
Okay, how did you get involved in the BFRO, the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization?
Okay, it first started with my encounter up in the Wynoochee Valley in 2005, October 2005. I was deer hunting, and we had an encounter. It was kind of fun looking back in retrospect, but at the time it scared the you know what out of me. Once I realized what it was, I saw this. It was evening time, hunting time was over, and it was time to pack up and hike out. And me and my friend were hiking out, and I saw this log that had these little stacks of rocks on them, and I thought, who's wasting their time doing that around here? Didn't know that Bigfoots do that. And kept walking the log and road, and all of a sudden we hit this wall of stink, and it was like burning baby diapers. It was really stinky. And I thought, who's camping and burning their garbage around here? And I thought, no, this is private timber company land. You're not allowed to camp here. There's nobody camping within miles of this place. So looked around, didn't see anything, kept on walking. We reached a point where we had to make a left-hand turn on the road and cross. The road went over a culvert, and there was a creek down there. And my friend said, what the F is that, pointing down into the brush. And it was twilighty, getting dark, and I could see this big hulking thing down in there, and the sticks were popping, and it was there, but I couldn't see exactly clearly what it was. And I said, well, maybe it's a bear or something down there. Let's just keep going. We kept on going. Went about another 200 yards, made a little corner, went out of sight of that spot, and all of a sudden it started to vocalize. And it was four extremely loud woo-hoo type calls that you could probably hear for, I don't know, 3-5 miles. It was really loud. And suddenly I'm going through my mind going, what is this? You know, I'm thinking all the different animals that make noises, and the only thing that I couldn't account for was a Sasquatch. So I was like, oh my God, that's a Sasquatch. And then all of a sudden everything clicked, the smell and everything, and we took off running. I went home, started listening to recordings that were posted on the internet at the time, and I found the BFRO's website, and they have a bunch on there, and I found one that was a pretty close match. Not exactly, but it was like the same voice singing a different song, but it was pretty much the same. It was like, yeah. So Monday morning I go into work and I'm telling everybody. So I found out I had about a half a dozen coworkers that had close encounters, eyewitness sightings and all that, eyeball sightings. But then I'm trying to figure out how to cope with this. And some people suppress it, put it out of their mind, say it didn't happen. Other people go, oh, man, I got to read everything I can. So that was me. So I was reading stuff and books, and at lunchtime I'd go on the internet and I'd find the stories and I'd read those. And I'd do that at home in the evening. I thought, you know what? I've got to figure this out. So I saw the BFRO had expeditions. You could sign up and go. Not free. You know, someone's got to pay for all the logistics and everything. So I signed up. And what a blast. First expedition. We heard vocalizations. People saw them. I didn't. We found footprints. I got to meet Bob Gimlin. You get him around a campfire and let him tell the whole story, you're going to hear details you've never heard anywhere else. So, great time. Started networking with other like-minded people that were attending there. Still friends with them. And the organizers saw that I was really into it. And so they said, would you like to be an investigator? I said, sure. And so I started investigating the fall of 2006. And been doing it ever since. I've investigated 185 reports. Not all the reports are actual sightings. They're a variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
But from the explainable all the way to, oh, yeah, he was like 6 feet from me and I'm standing there looking at him.
Most of the witnesses, it's my understanding, you know, they don't want to be named and the locations, but could you share some of those types of stories where it was like right in front of them and kind of thing? Or
I found out that there's several different kinds of reports that you get. There's the, I saw one cross the road in front of me, or I heard a sound that I can't identify. I think it might have been a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch or whatever you want to call them, to the kind of we call it a habituation site, where somebody lives out in the country and they share the neighborhood with Bigfoots, and the Bigfoots come around and interact with them. And if the people aren't clued in as to what's going on, it can be quite frightening. They think maybe they're going crazy, or there's ghosts in their place, because they can do a lot of things too. I watch some of the ghost hunter shows and I'm going, they're dealing with a Bigfoot. They're not dealing with a ghost, you know, because I can tell, you know, by what they're describing.
The cabin in the woods and the things that are happening to them.
Yeah. And so this one, they're still friends. They're like family now. Live down the Napa Vine area. I won't give away the exact location.
Right.
They've had them as neighbors for 30 years now. Gave them all names, and the male and a female had three little ones. I actually got to see one of them just fleetingly through my FLIR. Man, are they fast. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, do they move. But they were seeing the woman especially. They seemed to be drawn to certain personality types. But the woman, they'd follow her around on their property. They would trash her dogs. Her dogs didn't like them, and they didn't like the dogs. And so all of the dogs got pretty well beat up.
Mm-hmm. But they're still alive?
The dogs have since passed on.
Oh, okay.
They have a new dog, and the family of Sasquatch that lived there knew that dog as a puppy.
Okay.
And accepted it and didn't treat it the way they treat other dogs. Okay. And so it would play with them. It'd go out, disappear, play with them, come back in stinking like a Bigfoot. But in general, they're not very fond of dogs.
Yeah.
So
a skeptic might ask, well, how do you know the dog wasn't playing with a skunk? And how do you know this? How come they haven't put up trail cams and got video? How come the basic...
Sure. All the
all
same,
great questions.
All the basic questions, right. Yeah. Well, first thing is, a skunk and a Bigfoot don't smell the same.
Okay.
Even though down in the South they call them skunk apes, mm-hmm. just because they stink.
Mm-hmm.
But having had a dachshund that liked to go in their holes and try to fight with skunks and usually come out of it well sprayed, I know what a skunk smells like, and they're different.
Okay.
Once you smell a Bigfoot and you know what that's what it is, you'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Trail cameras. They don't like trail cameras. They are masters of the woods. They know where everything is, where everything belongs. If they see something out of place, they're going to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like if you had new neighbors that moved in, and you wanted to get to know them, and so you snuck down into their living room and, you know, broke in their house, put up a trail camera in the corner of their living room, you know, maybe on a bookcase or something. You snuck out, you know, hoping to get some video or some good pictures just to see who they were. Well, if, when they come walking in their living room, they're going to spot that in about 2 seconds because it's out of place. It right. doesn't belong there. Well, Bigfoots are the same way. So they have this great ability to detect them and avoid them and even turn them off. Or they'll grab them from behind, put their hand over the lens, and they'll rip the thing off the tree, you know, or whatever you got it affixed to. They just don't like them. Now, audio recorders, they don't care about those. You can put an audio recorder out, and they'll stand there next to it and talk and all that, or they might pick it up and look at it and maybe walk off with it, but they're short attention span, and they will drop it, and you'll find it on the trail somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, they just don't like to be photographed.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, no, actually, the thing about the trail cams that kind of intrigues me is the possibility that the stone mounds and a few of the broken limbs on trees all share a similar electromagnetic thing that we've talked about on the show before. But the cameras, I mean, I would say up until the point where you're like, they're fine with video recording or with audio recording, I was like, maybe they share something similar in the frequency that allows them to notice them quicker. But then you said they were fine with audio recorders, so it's like,
well,
maybe not.
Isn't that different kind of technology?
It I think it has to do with capturing their image.
Mm-hmm.
A camera has a lens, and a lens is like an eye. And I think they see that as a threat. Or, you know, they just don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
They will avoid them. There are a few people who manage to get lucky and get a picture here and there. I have a friend of mine that studies an area over by Ashford. And he figured out where they go from their nighttime foraging up on this ridge line to spend the day. And so he snuck up there and he put a camera along the route they habitually took. And he got pictures. But what happened was is one of them discovered the camera and was trying to obscure the camera and shake it and move it around, maybe rip it off the tree while the others walked by. And in between being shaken, it got a number of pictures of their backs as they walked by. There was five of them. And they look just like Patty on the Patterson-Gimlin film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
wow.
pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, okay, Bigfoot, whatever it is, out in the woods,
mm-hmm.
very little exposure. It tries to avoid human contact, period. How does it even know what a camera is or know that it's going to take its picture?
They're smarter than you think.
Well, I could believe they were intelligent, but without exposure, you don't know what things are.
You know, there's a lot of Aboriginal societies, tribes, that kind of thing, who don't like their picture being taken. They say it steals their soul. They've never seen maybe a camera before, but you try and take their picture, they don't put up with it. And I think it's the same kind of thing.
And you know, another, and just theorizing here, throughout history, at least in the Pacific Northwest, there have been reports, and Scott would know way more about this than me, of early settlers taking shots at them, right? Like shooting at them.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm aiming something at you, and they throughout their history, they're like, hey, when they aim something at you, you know, that's bad news because, you know, I don't know. Again, just theorizing here, but could that be also maybe possible? Like we're aiming something at them, and in the past we've aimed guns at them.
Right, right. They're very wary of us, although they're extremely curious. It's a push-me-pull-me kind of a thing. They want to see what we're doing. They want to observe, especially when you've got kids. And, you know, they like to see them playing around. It's a safe environment when kids are there, you know, because they know the adults are going to keep it safe.
Right.
But at the same time, it's almost like it's considered bad form to be seen by one of us. So they are very elusive. They're great at hiding, and they always seem to leave vegetation between you and them.
Mm-hmm.
They very seldom, once in a while, but very seldom, will come and stand right out in front of you. they always will keep something between you and them. If they don't move, it's just like, remember the last few scenes of Harry and the Hendersons? When the Bigfoots are actually there, and you don't see them till they move.
Yep.
Whoever did that movie, he knew some stuff, because yeah. there's some stuff in there that was just not common knowledge,
mm-hmm.
but he knew some stuff about it. But that's the way they are. They stand still. You think you're looking at a stump. Or they'll hug a tree, be right up next to a tree, and they just kind of blend in with the bark. And you just don't notice them, and they know not to move. As soon as something moves, our eyes are adapted to pick up the movement. If they don't move, you don't see them. The same with deer and elk. If you can be amongst a herd of elk, as long as the wind is right and they don't smell you, if you freeze and don't move, they will ignore you. As soon as you move, then they suddenly pick up on what you are and they're out of there.
And you're a hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've been out in the woods. You've mm-hmm. done it, seen it, been there. Mm-hmm. So you know the difference between a bear and not a bear.
right, yeah. A bear's on all fours. And even when they stand up, a bear has no shoulders.
Right.
And a Sasquatch has very wide shoulders. They might be a mature adult male has got shoulders that are 4 or 4.5 feet wide. You can set a man on each shoulder.
Yeah.
One of my witnesses described it that way. He saw one that close. You were asking, tell you about some of the stories where people were that close. Mm-hmm. So this was, I think, my third investigation. I was new into it. It was down by PL.
Mm-hmm.
The man was a hunter, and they had opened a gate. Weyerhaeuser had opened a gate that had been closed for a number of years, and so he was able to drive in there. So the hunting was pretty good. There was some new clear cuts and that kind of thing. And it was evening, and he dropped his son off top of a peak and to watch a clear cut. And he drove down over the hill and down to turn around in a log landing, and is coming back. It's right before dark, and he sees this thing move that was off to his left on his side of the vehicle, and he stopped because he was curious what it was. Well, it was a Sasquatch, a male Sasquatch, and it stood up. It figured, okay, I'm had. It had been down on its belly, hoping he would just drive on by, but he got seen. So he stands up, and they're standing there 15 feet from each other. And it made some huffing sounds, blowing his cheeks out, threat-type sounds while it looked at him. And the guy was just so dumbfounded that he couldn't even think to pick up the camera that was sitting on the seat next to him. But it opened its mouth and screamed at him, full power-on scream. It was so loud that his ears rang for days, he said. And all he could do is scream back as he was terrified of this thing. And then it turned and walked off down towards the tree line, which is about 100 yards away. And it got down in the tree line, and it stopped there. So he takes off, and he picks up his son. His son says, "Did you hear that?" "Oh, boy, did I hear that." His son says, "Well, let's go down and see what it was." So they talked him into going back down there. They go back down there, and they pull up to the same place and stop. And it was one of these pickup trucks where you turn off the engine, the lights stay on for a minute,
mm-hmm.
and then turn off by themselves. So they had the lights on, and, they're okay with the lights on. But they could hear this thing in the tree line just screaming and hollering, busting trees down, breaking limbs, just throwing a ruckus. And then the lights went out. Now they're in the dark with it.
Yeah.
So your mind starts playing tricks on you or amping up your fear, and they had to get the heck out of there. But when the guy would tell me the story, and this is one of the ways you can tell if somebody is genuine or not, he would start to cry because it was so emotional.
Yeah.
The way it hit him. He saw it. He said its tongue was purple. Its teeth were like horses' teeth. He could see the uvula. I have a hard time with that word. Uvula in the back of your throat, the little dangly thing.
Punching
he
head.
Could see that. you know, its ears, its eyes, everything. I mean, he good close-up look at it.
Wow.
And he said it had mud and looked like poop and stuff all over its butt when it turned and walked away. It was, you know, pretty dirty.
Hmm. I don't know if I have anything for that.
Okay. When you go and investigate, how, what's that process like? Okay, you get contacted through the BFRO website, or somebody calls you and says, hey, someone had a sighting in this location, will you go talk to them? How does that process work?
Okay, well, when somebody turns in a report on the BFRO's website, it goes into a back-end database.
Mm-hmm.
That the public can't see. Right now, I just checked this morning, there's 72,212 reports in there.
Wow.
From the whole United States and a smattering from different places in the world,
mm-hmm.
but mainly in the United States. And they're all, it's an access database, and so it automatically sorts them by date and by state, county, you know, there's a lot of different parameters that it sorts by, and you can set those and mm-hmm. look things up if you want to. But you look through them and you find one that might be in the area you like to operate in, and you know, you pick it up, sign it to yourself, and generally you call them on the phone because they list their phone number there. Usually they list the phone number and their email. If the phone number is not there, and after a couple of tries, or if it's not there, you can email them and see if they'll call you back.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, you never hear anything from them, and you just write those off as unreachable.
Right.
But usually they're wanting to talk, and so you get them on the phone, and I just tell me what happened. I've already read their report several times,
mm-hmm.
and made some notes. And so tell me what happened. And they start telling you stuff. And I just scribble it down as they're telling me. And then I start asking them a few questions without leading them. Just open-ended questions because I want to pull out more details. And then usually what you end up doing is helping them through the experience. You let them know that, one, yeah, I can validate what you said. You're not crazy. You're all right. You know,
cause you're not alone.
You're not alone. A lot of people see them. A lot of people interact with them. A lot of people have the same experiences. So it's all cool. You're good. And if it's at a place where maybe there's some fresh evidence, you know, you go there. You meet, arrange to meet them. You know, if it's a female witness, I'll, you know, get my wife, or mm-hmm. before I was married, I would call up a friend and a female friend because I'm not going by myself.
Right.
You know. And
That's good form, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. You don't. I learned that by having to, when I was in Civil Air Patrol, we worked with cadets, and you work with these young people.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be very careful about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're not allowed to give them a ride home and be one-on-one with them.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So. You do the same kind of thing, and just for safety's sake. But anyway, you go and you say, you know, you get them to walk you through what happened, point out where things happened, and then you start looking around for any evidence. Usually what you're looking for is like footprints.
Mm-hmm.
They're hard to find. Sometimes you can find impressions, you know, where they impressed a foot-shaped thing down into the grass or mm-hmm. or the mud or something like that, but it takes a special set of circumstances to get a good clear footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it's not a clear footprint. We call that just an impression. But you look for that kind of stuff. You might look for hair, but even hair is everywhere. My friend Rick Knoll. He told me, you know, we used to work together at Boeing, and he told me, he says, you know, hair is way overrated because everything has hair. There's deer out there with hair. There's elk out there with hair. Mm-hmm. There's coyotes, bears, cougars, dogs and cats.
Skunks,
you know, all of that has hair. So there's hair everywhere. So you're going to find hair. It can be anything, really. But in once... particular unique circumstance down at the Napavine site, They had put up a swimming pool, one of those 15 feet diameter, 4 feet deep, had a little electric pump and a filter and a little ladder that goes in it. Well, they never got to use that pool because the Sasquatches started using it the first night they set it up. They'd get up in the morning and there would be this oily sheen over the top, bugs crawling around in there, grass and stuff, and then mud on the bottom. Footprint sized mud places in the bottom, and the pool filter was full of hair. So I got a wad of that hair, and I still have that.
Now, could that have been a bear that stumbled in, or an elk, or a deer that jumped in? I'm just being
skeptical.
Well, you
know, a deer or an elk isn't going to jump in a pool like that. A bear might. Yeah. Bears get in swimming pools, but in a pool like that, it would have ripped it open. You know, getting you know, his claws.
Yeah.
But they think that the youngest child was born in the pool.
Oh. Hmm. Wow.
Because one morning there was, it was like blood in there, and
right.
this woman is a mother, and she went, oh, put two and two together.
Right.
Oh, that's what I heard last night. You know, because they can hear them.
Yeah.
You know, they sleep in the second floor of the house, but they hear what's going on outside. I actually just yesterday I got a little text from them saying, hey, they were banging on the side of the house last night.
See, I would be afraid if that started happening like that out or in, you know, out at the house. I would be like too afraid to like look outside. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, a lot of
But
a lot
some
of people
would be like, well, why didn't they get a camera and go out the window and do this? And you know, it's always different when it's happening to you, as opposed to what I would do if I were you.
Well, taking pictures at night is pretty darn difficult.
Yeah.
You've got to have special equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, like even a thermal won't take a picture through a window.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
No, it won't. And if you open the window, well, they're gone. You
right.
know, they realize you're there.
Right.
I know the lady. She just opens the window up and just gets by the window and just listens and enjoys the show.
Right. Right. She, not out for fame. Not out to prove it to anybody.
No. They've had opportunities to have like National Geographic come and do an episode on their place, and they were like, nope, don't bring them over here. You know. They just want their privacy, and they like their Bigfoot neighbors. And they come and go. The original family has kind of moved on,
mm-hmm.
although they say she's coming back. But other ones have come in who don't know people very well, and they're not as nice.
Mm-hmm.
They came over and they decided that anything outside these people's house was their territory, not didn't belong to these people. That's what they thought.
Oh.
And so they'd go outside and they'd throw a fit, you know.
Wow.
So, you know, they're like people. They have different personalities and different understandings and
mm-hmm.
tolerances for different behaviors and that kind of thing.
Right. Just look at Facebook.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Could you share the story? And I believe I probably have some misinterpretations here of the gentleman who used to have a visitor, and he got to sit close across from.
Oh yeah,
That's
Arnie.
Okay.
Arnie Ose. He's passed on now. That's why I can use his name.
Okay.
but if you went to Ocean Shores and you said Arnie the plumber, everybody knows who you're talking about. So. Ring a bell for you?
It does.
Okay. All right. So Arnie lived in Ocean Shores, and he was about my age. He was mid-60s, but he'd smoked all his life. He wasn't in good physical health. He had to have an oxygen nebulizer with him all the time, you know, a little tank and the thing through up to his nose and over his ears. And
mm-hmm.
Anyway, he'd been over helping some neighbors fix some plumbing. He was retired from plumbing, but he was helping some neighbors fix some plumbing. And they gave him a ride home, and there was four people in the car, besides him. And so they drop him off, and they're waiting for him to get into his house, you know, to make sure he gets in there safe. So he's up on his porch, and he's fiddling with his keys. And pretty soon he hears the people in the car just screaming their heads off. And he looks at them like, what's going on? And they're all pointing to his backyard. And he looks around his backyard, and here's a Sasquatch walking by about maybe 30 yards away, just walking by. And the odd thing was, there was two deer in front of it and two deer behind it. It was like it was walking with the deer. Oddest thing. But he noted how tall it was, and he marked it with a piece of tape on the tree. And then a couple of days later, he was trying to cut a little trail with some loppers to go through the brush so he could make a shortcut over to the main north-south drag, that divided road, right before the sand dune.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he was working his way through there, and suddenly he smelled something really bad. And he didn't see anything. He's looking around, and then it moved. He says once it moved, he realized what he was looking at. And it was like this giant cow-sized Brillo pad getting up off the ground. It had been sleeping. And it got up on its hands and knees, and it turned its head to its left and looked at him. And he's standing there. He knows he can't run. He's too feeble to run. He dropped his loppers, which was probably a good move.
Mm-hmm.
And he just stared at it. And then it turned its head, and it kind of looked right and looked left again and looked right and looked in front of it and looked back at him. And its face expression was no longer threatening. It was like, oh, hi, how are you? And then, yeah, it was like, so it put him at ease instantly.
Yeah.
When he saw that facial expression was no longer threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And then it decided where it was going to go, and it slithered on its belly up through the brush and away and took off. So he gets himself back to his house and he calls the police. They were there within 2 minutes. I talked to one of the officers, still Facebook friends with him.
Nice.
He's retired now. But he said, Scott, we interviewed him as if it was a crime and he was a witness to a crime. He says, and then we went back and we did it again. And his story never, ever changed. He says, not only that, but we found a handprint and we found some other evidence. And so they marked it off the crime scene tape, which was still there when I got there.
Hmm.
And sure enough, yeah, they'd taken a plastic tub and put over the handprint, and it was there in the soft earth. And then there was places where you could see, since it took off on its belly, where its toes had dug in as it was taken off.
Mm-hmm.
And searching around, there was these little trails all through that thick brush where it went. And we found out where it was sleeping. And then we started, you know, doing some little more research around there, and we find out, Arnie said, there used to be 42 raccoons, now there's none. It ate raccoons. He said, the neighbors would wonder where the trash was going. They said the trash can was full, they'd go out there the next day and it was half empty.
Hmm.
They're wondering where the trash is going. So he decided he was going to go out there and sit in the brush and see what happens. And so he goes out there, sits down on a little stool. They come walking up and sat down. And so he talked to it. It just made kind of funny hooing sounds and that kind of thing, but it looked at him, you know, and he would tell it jokes. And he ended up doing that 17 times, and he logged each time, and he logged also whether it was day or night. And he realized that it was understanding what he was saying. Because at one point, he thought, I'm going to do a little test. I want to find out what this thing is really understanding. So he says, well, I have to get up and go now. But he didn't get up. He just stayed sitting. But it stood up.
Hmm.
So it understood that he was saying he had to go. So
right.
They understand us. It turns out, if you can get one of the tribal people who know, maybe one of the elders, to open up and talk to you, be sure and listen and keep your mouth shut. Just listen. You'll find out that the Sasquatches speak their language. whatever region, whatever language is spoken where you are, you know, they can speak that native dialect. And so a Muckleshoot gal explained to me once that they even take part in their ceremonies, but they're ceremonies that non-tribal people are not allowed to be at. So they're more in tune to them than anybody else. So if you can get a tribal person to tell you their lore and what they know about them, listen, because they really do know. They know better than anybody. Although to a lot of people it may sound like it's legend stuff or folklore stuff. No, they know. Without a doubt.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you've investigated a lot of events. Have there ever been any that you've investigated personally that turned out to be like misidentification that you could 100% say that it wasn't a Bigfoot?
It's really hard to having not been there yourself, to prove a negative,
mm-hmm.
to prove that it was something else. Generally, all you can say is inconclusive. I can't tell for sure whether you saw something or didn't see something, or what you heard. I can't tell for sure was that something that was an animal of some kind, or was that really a Sasquatch, unless they got a recording. Sometimes they have a recording, and you go, oh, yeah, I recognize that, you know. But, you know, it's... I can't remember a time when I could tell somebody, no, you saw a bear,
yeah,
or you saw a cougar, because the differences are so great that if it was a bear, they knew it was a bear. If it was a cougar, they knew it was a cougar.
So misidentifications aren't all as common as you might think, is that?
I don't think they are. Yeah. I think, you know, when people see one of them, especially in the Pacific Northwest, where there's, you know, most people know what a bear looks like. You know, even if they live in Seattle or someplace, well, they go to the zoo, they know what a bear looks like.
Yeah.
You see a bear out there, it's down on all fours, it's got a long snout, it's got these little pointy ears or little ears that stick up.
Mm-hmm.
Generally a roly-poly kind of a physique, you know. If they stand up to take a look around, which they sometimes do, they stand up to sniff the air and get a better view of things. They have no shoulders, not at all. So it's most people don't make that big of a mistake and misidentify it. Usually, it's they didn't see anything;
mm-hmm.
they just heard something, and then it's like, well, I don't know.
Are many of these witnesses, are they Sasquatch enthusiasts, believers, you know, are they into Bigfoot before this happens, or are they people that were just minding their own business and all of a sudden this thing is there, and what kind of thing?
Most of the time, they were just minding their own business, going out hiking or fishing or, you know, walking with their kids or, you know, taking the dogs for a walk or something like that, or driving through the countryside. You know, most of them were generally ambivalent, maybe curious about it, you know, like watching In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, you know,
right.
Search of Bigfoot, or
right.
they've all seen the Patterson-Gimlin film, you know, and maybe a little intrigued by it.
Yeah, but there weren't, you know, citizen researchers going out looking.
There are some of those.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of those. Some put together little groups, mm-hmm. and they go out squatching.
Yeah,
you know, hey, it's a great way to learn. I mean, you know, you got the kind of people that are willing to get their camping gear and go out and spend 3 or 4 days out in the woods, and then you got your kind of they just sit behind a computer screen and blog and argue with people about the validity of somebody's sighting when they never got up out of their chair.
Right.
You know, those that get out in the field learn. Because if you spend enough time looking for them, they'll come looking for you. And you're going to have some interactions. When the VFRO does their expeditions, at least 85% of the time, we have interaction, and we might have 40, 50 people at that expedition, but something happens. When you got that many people all thinking about the same thing, the Bigfoots just have to come see what the party's about. And they just love watching what's going on.
Can you share the report or more details from what you know of it? Let's see if I can recite it. I believe the person was going out on their deck to smoke a cigarette or something and heard a commotion that was like under the deck.
Oh, okay. Again, ocean shores.
Yeah. It's like the last, see, almost like eight sightings have been ocean, or reports.
There's been six really good reports from ocean shores.
Yeah.
It appears to be their wintering over area. In the wintertime, if you go out there in the dark, three quarters of the houses are dark because they're seasonal. You know, they might use them on a weekend, or they might use them just during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very dark. The brush is impenetrably thick. You go 2 feet into that brush, you'll disappear. So they heard, the woman heard what sounded like a rabbit being killed, and she goes up onto their second story deck, which does not have any access from the ground. You have to go through the house to get up there. And she's going out there to see what it is. She's in her nightgown. She's got her lantern, you know, one of the little old-fashioned kind with a 6-volt battery strapped to it, you know, and right. A little handle and all that. And her dog was out there with her, and she's, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, and this thing walks from the brush directly underneath her and was basically looking up at her from underneath, maybe only a foot or two away from her, but the deck was between them. And she could hear it, you know, inhaling air, sniffing, trying to smell her.
Mm-hmm.
And she freaks out. The dog freaks out first, runs in the house. She freaks out. She goes in the house. Didn't go back out. Got called to that one. Met them there. Found where the Sasquatch had been hanging out to watch them in their house.
Oh, wow.
And then they said, and there's always more to the story. When you get a witness to talk, there's other things that have happened that maybe they haven't put two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said something about, we saw this little furry thing come out, and he was really fast, and he spun around out in the lot next to us and ran back into the brush. And I went, well, that sounds like a little baby Sasquatch. So we went out there, and sure enough, we found these little baby footprint impressions out there.
And how do you know they weren't rabbit, or they weren't baby bears, or...
Or maybe a child's from earlier in the day?
Well, I don't think parents let their children run around barefoot in those swamps.
I ran around barefoot in a lot of weird places.
I don't know. It was just like, well, who's out here? Who's around here? They know their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
The house, from their house, the lot next to them on the north side was vacant, and that's where it was. The lot next to that was they use it for a bed and breakfast kind of a place.
Mm-hmm.
Rented out. Airbnb, I guess they call those nowadays.
Right.
And there was nobody from there that day. So,
right.
And they actually saw it. You know, if they went out there and just spontaneously found these little human-looking footprints, well, yeah, you could say, well, there was a kid playing around out there.
Right. Right.
But they saw it.
What time was it that they saw it?
It was, I think, in the evening, just before dark.
Okay.
And it was all black and hairy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they are. The little ones, man, they are fast.
Well, the big ones, I understand.
Oh, the big ones are fast, too. Yeah, yeah. This coworker of mine, his sister was traveling on the highway between the town of Roy and Spanaway. And it's going through the base, through Fort Lewis there. And on one side is a frontage road. There's the base fence, and then there's a road right on the other side. And she was driving along going 55, and a Sasquatch was keeping up with her, running.
Wow.
Well, they'd go really fast.
And there have been other reports like that to where a Sasquatch is running with traffic, keeping up with that
keeping
traffic.
Up with traffic,
Wow.
Yeah, there was one on I-84 that probably 100 people saw.
Including law enforcement, right?
Including law enforcement, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think I've heard about that one. I-84?
Yeah, I-84 going up Columbia Gorge.
Yeah.
And it had, I don't know, swam the river or something, and it was trying to go south. And it got across the westbound lane of traffic, no problem, but it was the two directions were separated by quite a bit, and it tried to get up and cross the highway going eastbound, and the traffic was so heavy it couldn't safely get across. So it's like a little bit panicked, wide-eyed, and it's just running along with the traffic, trying to look for a chance to dart across and dive over the railing on the far side of the road. So all these cars are passing it. They're seeing it as they're driving by. I guess at least 10 of the people that called it in were law enforcement.
Wow.
But, you know, it finally saw its opening and darted away, got away, and that was the last anybody ever saw of it, you know, and it all happened so suddenly, nobody takes a picture. And back then, dash cameras weren't a thing.
Yeah, they are now.
They are now, you know. The last one I saw, if I'd had my dash camera, I would have got it on the dash camera.
Really?
Yeah. That's what spurred me to get a dash camera.
Yeah?
You know, because I came around a corner, and there it was. And it was funny, because we passed another vehicle going opposite of us. And that vehicle came around the corner as we were going around the corner. And so the Sasquatch thought that the vehicle was gone by, and because of the noise, it couldn't differentiate that there was two vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ready to cross the road out of sight, and I come around the corner, and there it is.
Wow.
And it turned around and disappeared right back into the brush. But, I mean, upright, about 8 feet tall, long, shiny, black, flowing hair on its arms. Beautiful hair.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So you've spoken at conferences, and you've been in expeditions, and you've met a lot of people. What is your opinion, if you don't mind sharing it, on the woo? We've talked about the woo in recent episodes, and the difference between like the science kind of base community and the woo.
Mm-hmm.
Can they mind speak? Can they cloak? Can they do these kind of almost paranormal things, in your opinion?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. When a person first gets into this, they think, one, I got to prove it. I got to use a scientific method. Well, they don't cooperate with the scientific method, so throw that out. That doesn't work. And you learn that pretty quick.
Yeah.
So then you realize, well, what we're doing is intelligence gathering. We're observing what they're doing, and we're putting the pieces of a puzzle together using intelligence, you know, using the information that we gather. But you keep doing this, and all of a sudden you're going to run into something that's a little bit weird. And, it's like walking along, and I'll just use myself. Walking along, I had my walking stick, and I have a camera that screws to the top of the walking stick, you know, so I can steady it when I want to take a good picture. And I hear a voice in my head say, "Put the camera away." Where did that come from? So I go, okay. So I unscrewed the camera and I put it in the pouch. And the gal standing next to me, she says, "What did you just hear?" And they said, "Put the camera away." And she said, "I heard it too."
Wow.
But it wasn't an audible voice. It was just suddenly in your head from outside.
Mm-hmm.
Is really weird. That's the first time I ever experienced what you would call mind speak.
Wow.
But you'll run into the vibe where you get too close. And we've called it infrasound for lack of a better describing term, but it starts off like a growl. It's a very low tone, and then the frequency of that tone reduces down to where you can't hear it anymore, but it's a resonance with your body, and all of a sudden you're feeling it resonate your chest. Okay, and they can hit you with that, and that'll make you sick. Make you want to feel like you're going to throw up. It'll definitely give you the heebie-jeebies and make you want to run away. If you don't back off, they can up the intensity, and they can focus it on one person in a group, or they can spread it out and hit the whole group. They can hit you so hard that they'll drop you to your knees if they want to. So they have that ability. A lot of people would call that paranormal. It's not paranormal. It's normal. We just don't understand it.
Yeah.
Cloaking. Seen it myself. Saw one walk across the trail about 30 yards in front of me. Two other people with me also saw it. Looked like Predator on the movie Predator. Just like that. Walked across the trail. Great big thing. Saw the trees as it went off the trail. We see the trees moving as it's going through them. It gets off the trail about 50 yards, we guessed. It starts whistling. And so my friend, she whistled back and forth, and they had a little exchange for about four times, and then it got bored, and it walked away. We could hear it walk away.
Wow.
A lot of people have seen them cloak. A lot of people have seen them uncloak and become visible. So it's a vibratory thing, is what we think,
right?
And actually kind of what they say. So while there are people that think they don't exist, there are people who have them as friends and know their names and they talk often. So, and then those people become very protective of their friends that they're living with in their woods. But they talk. We know how long they live. Because they told us, 120 years on average. They tell us how they cloak. It's a frequency thing. Their body's vibratory frequency is naturally higher than ours. So it's like looking at an airplane propeller. When an airplane propeller is not moving, it you can see it. When it starts to move and rotate, and it's going not too fast, you can still see it. When it gets up to 60 rotations, you can still see it. Suddenly it reaches a point where your eyes and your brain can no longer resolve the propeller moving because it's going so fast, and now you can see through it like it's not there.
Right.
Okay. Their bodies vibrate naturally at a higher frequency than ours. If they want to be seen, they have to intentionally lower their frequency to where we can see them. So most of the time, they're out there in a cloak state. So they can be out there, and that's why people don't see them. Because they're not visible to us. It's not that they're invisible. They're still there.
Yeah.
It's just our brain cannot handle a shutter speed of that speed. It's like taking a high-speed video of, say, a rocket sled shot or something like that, that you want to see what's really going on. So use that high speed camera. It's taking 25,000 frames per second. You try to watch that in real time, what are you going to see? Nothing.
Right.
But you play it back at normal speed, and then you can see what's going on. So if you had a high speed camera, you might be able to catch one that way, but they do that.
That would be pretty interesting, putting a high speed camera up someplace and seeing if you catch anything. Have you, on your journeys out, have you ever had, during, say, an episode of Infrasound, have you ever had any medical professionals with you of any sort that were able to take, just to check blood pressure,
vitals,
or take any type of vital signs from the people inflicted, just to see if there's any changes, anything that we can measure?
Not that I recall, although I do know of one situation in which a woman was severely injured. This is back at an expedition, I think it was Kentucky, and the doctors couldn't figure out what had happened to her, and it was like 6 months later she passed on. They hit her so hard, but they had the group of people had surrounded this individual in a group of trees, and they were throwing rocks at it and yelling at it and trying to get it to do something, and it was pretty terrified. And then they got this bright idea, well, let's leave this girl standing here by herself and we'll go back here a ways and we'll see what happens. Well, pretty soon all they could hear was the radio clicking on and off because she couldn't speak anymore.
Wow.
And it had really hit her hard with the infrasound and injured her.
Wow.
So they're nothing to trifle with.
Right.
And also, the most of the times where you hear anecdotal stories of people shooting at them, it doesn't turn out well for the shooter.
Right.
They usually end up not surviving it. So, you know, when I see a report come through, well, I shot one, and it's over here.
Right.
It's like I'm going, oh, yeah, right. If you shot one, you think that there's just one. There's usually several, and they're not going to take kindly to you shooting their friend or their brother or their husband, you know, or their cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to get you. They will get you.
Have you ever been in a situation where any have been aggressive towards you?
Towards me personally, no. No.
Have you heard?
I've heard of it, and it's quite common. A person will, say a hunter, and he's maybe checking out this new drainage that he hasn't hunted before, and he starts going up there. Well, they're there. Their family is there, and they want to be left alone, and they don't want you there. And so the first thing that they'll probably do is give you the vibe and make you leave, and usually that works. And you just feel like, I shouldn't be here. I need to leave. And so you leave. But some people push through that, and they keep going. Well, then they'll start yelling at you. They'll shake trees. They'll bust tree limbs off. They'll make a big ruckus. And there's been a few occasions where they have chased people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one guy, he was being chased, and he thought that he was going to die, and he tripped over a root and fell down, and he knew, I'm dead now because it's going to get me, but it stopped and waited for him to get back up. And then he took off running, and it took off running. It was basically chasing him out of the area, not intending to catch him, just wanting to leave.
Hmm. You know, you would think that a person would try to communicate with them. Even I know why it doesn't happen, because when it happens to you, game over. It's just like, right?
Yes, yeah, it leaves you gobsmacked. Your whole worldview is suddenly upside down.
Right.
You realize, oh my God, they're real, and they're huge, and they look scary,
right.
And you're just probably peeing yourself, and you're in shock. Yeah, you're emotionally in shock, and they don't think to take a picture.
Yeah.
They don't think to say hello. Yeah. You know,
hey, what's your name?
It's after you've got a lot of experience under your belt, and you know they're not going to hurt me. One walks out. Like if I'm out hunting, and one walks out, I'm going to put my rifle down, step away from it, and wave and say, hello, my name's Scott. And just see what it does. It'll probably look at me and turn and walk away. But maybe not.
You
who knows?
Know. Yeah,
but I'm not going to be afraid of it.
Right. Because you've been out there so much.
Right. 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 And there's, what a lot of people don't know is there's two things out there. There's probably more than two things out there, but there's two things that people conflate as Sasquatch. And they look similar. One does not have what we call the woo abilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a flesh and blood thing, and there's not many of them, but they are much stockier, more like a gorilla. They have a more monkey-like face. But there's not as many, and they stay more to themselves. But if you run across one, it may not turn out well for you.
Yeah.
Then there's the others. The Native American people call them the watchers, the man that walks in two worlds, spirit world, physical world. They look just like a normal human being, only they got lots of long hair all over them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fur, it's hair. When you see it, it's really hair.
Mm-hmm.
So two different things. People call them Sasquatches. You know, one might look like your drinking buddy, the other might look like Ivan the gorilla, but only he's a humanoid figure.
Okay. Have you seen both yourself?
I can't say for sure. I've seen six of them. One of them may have been that way.
Hmm.
Most of them that people see are the people type ones. I mean, they look just like a person. They look like Johnny with long hair.
That's scary. So if someone was interested into learning more, I mean, can they go on an expedition? When are there expeditions? Can they just go out in the woods and, you know, try to do some of this stuff themselves?
Sure.
What kind of advice, some tips? Well, like, let's say we take John out, because John hasn't been in the environments that you and I have. You're mm-hmm. the veteran here. Mm-hmm. What could we do with him?
Well, one of the first things you could do is go on a VFRO expedition and go to a place that's got generally had proven activity, and you'll meet a lot of people who are very knowledgeable. You'll meet the newbies. There's always a dozen or so, maybe two dozen newbies, but there's a whole lot of very experienced people there, and you'll learn a lot from them. That's one way. Mm-hmm. The other is, if you're going to go on your own, find a place, and it can be almost anywhere, where you can go camp and spend at least 4 days. And do it repeatedly, 4 days every month. And go there, and nothing's going to happen, and something happens.
Yeah.
They're there, they're observing you, and they're trying to decide, are these people okay? You know, if you go there and you've got your guns out and you're shooting, your target shooting and all that, you're not okay. I love to target shoot, but I don't do it when I'm doing this, you know. Mm-hmm. If I carry my gun out there, before I go out in there, I say, guys, it's me, Scott. This rifle's for my protection. I won't shoot you. It's not for you. But if you're going to do it just to interact with them, you go out, you camp out, and you let them find you, because they will. You can leave them gifts. If you leave them gifts, do not put them on the ground, because animals eat off the ground. You put them on a little table, or you put them on top of a stump, and it can be anything from food, you know, apples, oranges, corn, that kind of thing, peanut butter, jar of peanut butter, toys. Little ones like the toys. Toys, that kind of stuff. But you put it in a place where they can come get it without being seen. You want to make them feel comfortable coming and getting that stuff. Don't try to trick them. Don't put up your trail cameras. You put up your trail cameras, whole deal's off. You'll never have any interaction at all. Guaranteed. So just go do that, and pretty soon they'll come find you. But it takes a long time for them to build up trust.
Can't blame them.
No.
Right.
So,
anything you want to add in there at all?
No, I have nothing else. But
yeah. I could talk to Scott for hours.
Well, we could do this for hours. I mean,
right. Totally.
Start going through some of the stories and stuff, and then all of a sudden they all blur together. But when you start talking, and then pretty soon they come out, and again, you, oh yeah, I remember when,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
But Randy's down in Long Beach.
Oh yeah.
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 This is how you shake hands. Yeah. And it reaches across the vehicle to shake his hand.
Do you want to
Were you there?
I wasn't there, no.
Well, you went with me to meet
him.
Well,
I was, yeah, because I know Randy, and I went with him to Randy's to, because he's the investigator. I'm the newbie.
Right. Yeah, we found where they were going around through the woods around his house, and he had a place where he would give them peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and he found out they don't like white bread. It's got to be whole wheat bread.
Right.
Or multigrain or something like that. But
right.
Give it on white bread, they'll throw it on the ground.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, gosh, I don't want to take much more of your time. Otherwise, I'll ask more questions about, you know.
Well, how long is your Strange Harbor show on?
Well, it's all as long as we want now. But
right.
How about if you have a little more time.
Sure.
I have to go get Gracie in about 15 minutes, though. But the gentleman driving on 109 by the Iron Gate Bridge, with the one chasing the deer?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can you share that one?
Yeah, so this guy came up to me and started talking to me at Sasquatch Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I got a story to tell you. Oh, okay, yeah, I'm all ears, tell me. Well, he'd gone into Hoquiam to get his mail and get his Social Security check. It was back when actually got a check. There wasn't direct deposit. And he was driving back, and it was later in the afternoon. The sun was maybe an hour from setting, so it was fairly low on the horizon. And goes across Siren Bridge, and there's a clear cut on the right-hand side of him, and he sees this deer come screaming out of there, crossing the road. So he thought, uh-oh, something's chasing that deer. I better slow down. And he's in this little sports car, open-top convertible sports car. He slows down, and the Sasquatch comes charging out of the brush, out of the clear cut, because, you know, it's starting to grow up, charges out of the brush, runs across in front of him, and then stops and turns around and looks at him. And so he's sitting there idling in the westbound lane, and it's standing on the south side of the road, and they're eyeballing each other for, he said, it seemed like 90 seconds, but more than likely it was 10 or 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But it, he was looking at it, and he thought, I'm completely exposed here. I have nowhere to hide. I couldn't get out of my car and run, and even if I wanted to, it's going to chase me down. So he just sat there, and they looked at each other, and then it said the word suahuaha, and it made a gesture with its arms like go away, go away. He said then it put its arms out. He said it helicoptered around and took off into the brush. And he drew a picture of it. It's a really good picture. It's a really good picture of that.
Wow.
And it looked just like a person
with a bunch of hair.
And he said because he said it was gray, and so it was older. He felt it was older. And because it was older, his hair was thin on the top of his head. And so the sunlight was coming through the hair. And he could see the outline of its skull. And he said it didn't have a pointy head. And everybody says, you know, Sasquatches have this sagittal crest. Some do. Some of them might just be bad air sticking up, you know.
Yeah.
But that one didn't.
Wow.
When you live with them and they're around, you have to know what to look for to see the signs that they're there.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can take him out in the woods.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if you had time.
I mean, I am far more willing to go out in the woods and have something happen for myself than I am inclined to believe some of the woo.
Well, it's for each person, it's a journey.
Right.
It's a personal journey.
Yeah.
I can't convince you of any of that stuff. You have to experience it yourself.
Right.
And that's the way it is for everybody.
Yeah.
And some people can only go so far, and then the woo stuff gets to them, and they go, nah, I can't deal with this anymore, and so they stay where they're at. And other people are going, oh, I want to learn more, and they'll teach you more. If you want to learn more, they'll teach it to you.
Well, I absolutely want to learn more. Well, Scott, it's an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
I appreciate pleasure. You. And I do look forward to talking to you more and doing things.
Sure. Well, I just live out by Matlock now.
There you go.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you would like to know more about Scott Taylor and the BFRO or catch up on some of the latest sightings and reports, log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.